Do not underestimate the power of the first screening. Don't underestimate it. Make it special. Make it authentic. Make it yourself. Don't overdo it, but I mean a true, authentic, sincere, how are we doing today? So glad you're here. Now, how are we going to take that relationship to the next level? You want to be actively listening. You've got to be drilled in. Don't be waiting to give him your expertise. Okay? Don't be, I get that point I want to give you. Don't over talk them. Don't want better them. Please don't interrupt. Never pass up an opportunity to keep your mouth shut.
Welcome back to Time-Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell, the show about trust-based selling, leadership, discipline, and real-world lessons that hold up under pressure, especially in real estate and sales. Today, I'm joined by Neil Rogers. Neil is a longtime sales leader, author, and mindset speaker who built a multi-million dollar business on one core principle: serve first. For nearly 40 years, Neil led award-winning territories in the promotional products industry, and he's distilled those lessons into his book, Bar Tips, a powerful blend of sales and leadership through the lens of bartending, where every interaction is about reading people, creating connection, and showing up with professionalism. Neil also co-founded Positive Activity, a mindset-based system built around daily practices that drive creativity, productivity, and resilience without the hype. And there's a deeper layer to his story. Neil and his wife, Lori, founded PACE, an organization supporting special education, inspired by their journey raising their son, Craig, who is non-speaking and autistic. This conversation is going to hit home for anyone in a commission business, agents, sales professionals, entrepreneurs, because we're going to talk about old school principles that still win, hospitality as a trust advantage, and how to serve people with purpose without losing your backbone. So let's get into it. Hi, Neil. Welcome. How are you doing today?
Mark, I'm a little chilly, but I'm doing just great. Thanks for having me on.
So you're up in New Hampshire is the way I understand it. How's the weather been up there for you?
We got 2 feet of snow a couple of weeks, about 10 days ago. It's going to get freezing today. So that's the first time we've had freezing in a while. And so it's been a winter so far. So it's which we haven't had one in a few years. So it's where we live. So it's settling into it. You know, first couple of days, it's like, oh God, we can't move and all this. But you know, you get settled into it, it's all right. I wouldn't want a steady diet of it, but we're gonna survive just fine.
Yeah. Well, it's a reminder to me whenever I don't like the weather in the middle of winter, it's always a reminder that spring is coming, and it makes me start anticipating and looking forward to it.
All we got to do is make it to St. Patrick's Day, Mark, and we're home free.
There you go. There you go. So, Neil, for my listeners, this is their first time hearing you, I think, for the most part. So can you share a little bit about your backstory and introduce yourself to them so they get to know a little bit about you?
So, I'm seventh of eight of an Irish Catholic family just outside of Boston. You will hear the accent, I'm sure. I hold it in high regard. I don't try to hide it, but I'm not as deep as most. I came out of high school a little bit lost, didn't know what I was going to do. Took a couple of swings and misses at community colleges. And then all the while I was in the hospitality business. You know, I dug it. I was good at it, you know, and I enjoyed it. So I started becoming a bar back, which is the kid that's running around doing all the work while the bartenders look like heroes, right? Well, then I decided I wanted to be one of those heroes. And that was the only reason, because I thought it looked cool. It wasn't because it was a career move or I was making a big leap. It was just, hey, that looks kind of cool. I think I'll try that. But what happened to me is that I'd be, you know, because my, you know, obviously my self-esteem was a little low at this point. I went and searched for a job and I got one. I wound up working the bar. And when I first poured a drink for a person and they liked it, I went, okay, that felt pretty good. Maybe this is something for me.
Okay.
But almost very quickly, though, I just discovered that wasn't going to be my life's work. You know, I just said, you know, I don't know if I want to work weekends for the rest of my life. And by the way, I have all the respect in the world for those that do.
Yeah.
But over time, people would say, you know, with your personality and the way that you connect people and this, that, and the other thing, you're probably pretty good in sales.
It's interesting that you mentioned that that first instance with bartending was when somebody gave you appreciation and there was sort of an esteemable win there. that it sort of turned on the light for you, it sounds like.
Aha, aha. First aha moment in the road back, as it were.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then so I still had to, you know, at that time, I mean, you had to get that degree. So I went back, I took another swing at it, and this time I learned a little process, a little algorithm in today's parlance. And that was, Mark, I don't know if you know this, but the teachers like you to show up. They like you to pay attention, to actively
participate,
answer questions, to do some extra work, to show up at the office hours. Is this sounding like sales to you?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, so I took that once. So I got pretty good at school. As a matter of fact, I couldn't believe it. This accounting teacher asked me, after again, self-esteem real low, I can't really do this. How the heck am I going to get out of it? Accounting teacher says, hey, would you like to be a tutor? I'm sorry, me? Okay, sure.
Wow.
So, he was a really cool guy. Anyway, so finished up, got my 4-year, wound up Dean's list, you know, it certainly wasn't, I mean, I had a couple of 3-8-5 semesters, so not bad. And I did wind up Dean's list for the whole gig. So, and then I took my first sales job, which was selling food for a food distributor, which was kind of natural because I knew all the places and whatnot right around Boston. So I went in and out of every kitchen in Boston or surrounding areas and hotel or whatever that wasn't already being sold by one of our people. I'd make 20 physical calls before 11 o'clock in the morning on a Monday. So very root-like sales. But you had to go after chefs. There's nobody more miserable on the planet than a busy chef. You got about 37 seconds with this guy or gal and you're out, if you can even get that far. So you have to almost wear them down. You do have to wear them down. And you have to wear them down with kindness and professionalism. You have to wear them down as if just with hospitality, just being nice, don't be intrusive. Don't be a jerk. Right. Don't be pushy. You know, if you're panicking, you know, it isn't going to work. So what happened with me, because of my, you know, my bartending prowess, I was making $100 a week as a salesperson before commissions. That was just kind of the training. It was a training number. Now, this is 1985, 86. But I made $500 on weekends on the bar.
So you had a little taste of bartending, and then you went back to school and succeeded there and then got into sales. Did your idea for the book, did you get those ideas before you started sales, or did you develop the tools in your book is Bar Tips, Sales and Leadership Through the Lens of Bartending. Did you have those ideas in place before you started selling, or did you sort of refine them after? And how did that work?
It was on the fly, because the book was written in retrospect, right? Written during you know what, and I won't say the word, right? And so,
okay.
What would happen was you look back and I just noticed these things were happening that were very similar to how you would treat people in a restaurant or a bar, right? And so it was innate to me. It was now inbred. It was what I did. So I didn't notice it really until 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Actually, about 8 years ago, my daughter was honored. I live on campus in a golf community in New Hampshire. And she was honored here for the chamber. And it was the guy who brought Five Guys Burgers to New Hampshire was the guy who was the keynote speaker. And he's a great, great speaker, nuts and bolts, my kind of speaking. That's the way I speak. And he was talking about pre-meal. So pre-meal, if you've ever worked in the restaurant business, is where you get your little, you know, what's 86, what the specials, blah, 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 blah. Well, in there, they have a standard menu, right? Five Guys Burgers. But what he would say, his rah-rah speech was, we're not in the burger business, we're not in the fry business, we're not in the soda business, we're not in the shakers. We're in the hospitality business. And my wife was there with me, and I looked at her and put in context, she was a food server at the place I worked at, one of the places I worked at. And I said, I've never left bartending. I've been bartending on the road for 35 plus years. It's the same stuff. Just, you know, show up on time, be well presented, give a good greeting, listen actively, all those simple things that we talk about in the book.
Okay.
So yeah, so that was the kicker. So yeah, so that was the retrospect, and then I went on from there. So but using this, and I know salespeople, and I know real estate people like to hear about volume. I took over $150,000 worth of business in the food business, and in 18 months it went to $1.5 million just doing that. Now,
huge growth.
You know your products. You know what you're doing. You know all those things are given. So spend your time on that peripheral knowledge. How else can I help you other than what I'm selling you? Can I introduce you to somebody else that might be? That's not for me, but I got a guy, right? So
yeah.
So those types of hospitality things, and then I did the same thing in the sporting. I sold athletic footwear and apparel for 8 years. I took over. Oh, by the way, the $150,000 in business equated to about $2,000 in commissions. It was I can't even remember the exact. It was not a lot of money,
right?
And
right.
In the sporting goods business, same process. Organized myself to the nines before I went on the road for them because it was fully commissioned. I got a little bit of a safety net with the food company. Not much. It was completely entrepreneurial. You know, if you don't make it, you don't make it, right? It's like any sales game. So, but the same thing, I organized myself. I organized my territory. Now I'm going all over New England with this and I get different lines and I get different types of customers and this, that, and the other thing. And I'd never done that before, but I organized myself. I got all my samples. I took the old Rand McNally maps that were blank and I plotted by pencil all the customers that I currently have. And then I found out, then I would always take the road less traveled. Never went the same route twice. So who am I going to trip over? And that went from $250,000 in sales to $10 million in 4 years.
So huge growth.
No complex marketing theory, no slick sales, no big dinners out, none of it. Now, dude, if I met somebody at a trade show, would I buy him a drink? Sure, I would, right? But typically what would happen, they'd buy one back. It was a friend relationship.
Right. So from the standpoint of, a real estate person or a salesperson that's in business, give a couple of practical examples of what you learned as a bartender that helped you make a bond or a connection with your customer.
Do not underestimate the power of the first greeting. Don't underestimate it. Make it special. Make it authentic. Make it yourself. Don't overdo it. But I mean a true, authentic, sincere, how are we doing today? So glad you're here. Now, how are we going to take that relationship to the next level? Well, first of all, I hope we all know this now, but we're going to use it again because it's an old adage. You got two of these and one of these, at least in that proportion, if not even 75-25, right? You want to give them enough about you, but you want to hear a lot about them. And you want to make note of it. You want to be actively listening. You got to be drilled in. Don't be waiting to give him your expertise. Okay? Don't be waiting to I got that point I want to give you, right? Don't overtalk them. Don't one better them. Please don't interrupt them. Never avoid. This is a great quote. I got this from one of the guys that mentor in the sales, the athletic footwear and apparel business. Never pass up an opportunity to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a powerful, a powerful reminder of the phrase that we've heard is that first impressions matter. And I wonder how many real estate salespeople really have thought through that process of how they're going to greet every single person they meet for the first time. Not only how are they presenting themselves the way that they look, I know a lot of real estate people from my experience, they're busy doing other things. They're doing other things and they're busy and their minds are all sort of, garbled and all over the place. And the phone rings and it's a potential customer and their first impression is that phone call and how they answer the phone. Or when they walk into a real estate office or they walk into an open house, that's a really powerful thing to remind people is to be aware of your first impression. The second thing you talked about was listening more than you talk. So I think that's awesome. Can you think of one or two of the biggest mistakes that you see salespeople doing today?
Well, I can talk about the ones that I experienced. I'll even talk about the ones that I experienced in real estate. It's we don't care about the inside baseball. What's going on in the industry? What's going on? You know what I mean? It's like, in the market, yes, but not the industry. Like, what's the market doing? What are the projections? What are they saying? And then be armed with some sort of factual data and, certainly your comps and all those things, but make sure they're comps. I mean, I've seen these things, really? You think that's a comp? But again, who knows that in the, it's the crazy days that we're working on here where people are buying anything for anything. I don't know how that works. But yeah, it's just, I think that would be, that's the thing. And, you know, even in our current business, which is the promotional products business, you know, we're in the marketing business. We're not in the stuff business. You know, we're really, you know, we're here to promote the fact that promotional product marketing can be the most effective marketing you'll ever use. And it's the only marketing you're ever going to be thanked for, right? Thank you so much for this. I appreciate that, but whatever it is, right?
Right.
So, but when they get into the whole inside baseball stuff on that, I just glaze over. I'll go to a trade show or a sales meeting. And they get into that. Well, you know, this company, I don't hear anything. Right.
Yeah.
So those
yeah.
are the things I think the inside baseball stuff is the stuff that I think they have to be. I would suggest they're careful of in my personal as a salesperson. I just go, well, you know, you should have showed up on time. Would have liked to have been better presented. Maybe your materials could have been organized better. Maybe if you knew the area a little bit better, you know, you walk right. on the streets, you know, I don't know. I mean, those are the things I notice. You know, I got to take a day off at times when you're doing that. It's like when I sit at a bar, right? Actually, a buddy of mine, one of my old buddies from the bar business, he and his wife will go to dinner and he'll be sitting at the bar and he's like, redesigning the place. And his wife will look at him and go, hey, Tom, take the night off. Right? But that's the thing. You know, how are you serving me? How are you, if you just come from a service, service first, as you say, service first thought process, you really can't go wrong. I mean, I don't know anything from closing techniques, from all that stuff. I've never used the only thing I've ever used that I learned it in a sales training was the upfront contract. Do you know what the upfront contract is?
No, share with us what that is, because I don't think I've heard that.
Thanks so much for coming in here. How much time do we have again today, Mark?
Oh, we have about 30 minutes.
Perfect. Mark, what I'd like to do in that period of time, if it's okay with you, I'd like to take a little bit and just tell you a little bit about me and what we do. And then I will hear a lot about the challenges that you're facing. And then I think at the end of that, we could probably assess whether or not we should go forward and go to the next step. Does that sound okay to you?
That does sound good.
That's the upfront contract.
So you got a trial yes there. That's very good. That's very good.
Well, just you want to keep the ball rolling. But the God's honest truth is, at the end, you might realize they're not for you.
Yeah, not a good fit. I liked the other thing that you shared, and I tell salespeople a lot of times, you know, to talk about what's important to the customer. And you pointed out that industry knowledge and the gossip about what's going on in the business or the local market and, you know, the competition and everything really is of no interest. Another pet peeve of mine is when people use the acronyms that everybody in the industry uses. They use the jargon and the public really doesn't understand it. They don't care about it. And actually it sort of works against you when you're trying to communicate with people to use that kind of language. So those are great points. I love that. Question for you. How do you serve people well without becoming a doormat? How do you do that?
Well, I think that's going to be, you have to trust your instincts. You know, if you have to see a symbiotic relationship. Are they digging what you're doing? Are you digging how they're responding? Right? Simple and not even on a grandiose way. Have they responded in kind to your positive, really great initial greeting?
Right,
you know,
right.
Just the simple things. I don't think it has to be this. So judge where you should go and how much you should do by A, if the fish is big and, you know, let's not be a kidder. You know, we want to keep them. But, and for them, you may go a little bit more than you might for another. But if they're respecting your time, if they're getting back to you in emails or texts, or are willing to get on a 5-minute phone call with you to smooth something over that isn't going well digitally, which gang out there, get on the phone, okay? Don't forget this. By the way, there's a very unused portion of this. It's called the phone.
The phone part. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I love that a lot of salespeople, they don't get that. The reciprocating part. I mean, we hear about win-win relationships and we hear about win-lose relationships and lose-win. I mean, it really comes down to is if I'm presenting myself to somebody in a positive, energetic, and valuable manner, if they're not responding to me, you know, there has to come a point at some time where you recognize that it's not going to go forward for you. It's not worth going. And that was also sort of the point of what you shared about your opening question, you know, hey, you know, how much time do we have? And here you gave them a sort of an agreement of what the next 30 minutes would be like. I like that. I like that a lot.
It's the simplest thing. And it's, and you can make it your own, twist it up however you want. You know, never deliver it same place, same way twice.
Yeah. Like everybody's an individual. Sure. So the other thing that you have done is you've created positive activity. Tell us a little bit about that.
So positive activity really is the sum total of my wife and my lives together. So again, stemming from my upbringing, which was a fine upbringing, it just wasn't, I wouldn't consider it the most positive environment to grow up in. I mean, my parents treated us fine. Nobody beat us. Nobody, you know, we were always fed, always clothed, all that. But, you know, let's just say the Socratic method wasn't practiced around the house, you know, a simple thing. If you want to ask for something, it'd be just kind of like, well, I appreciate you bringing that to us, but no. No discussion, right?
Yeah.
So what happened was I got into the restaurant business. I got into the sales business. Nobody told me this. I didn't see Tony Robbins or whomever, but when I was in the food business, you're going up, you're getting your head kicked in. I used to put notes on my dashboard, stay on the road, make another call. If it's for, make that last call a day. If you think you should go home, just walk in another door and drop off a flyer, introduce yourself. And then as you know, in the sporting goods business, the guys that I work with there, they were very positive. You know, we'd have our belly achings about this, that, and the other thing, but in terms of like the overall, it was positive. And then since we've been in this business, it's the same thing, it carried on. But about, I think it's about almost 15 years ago. We had 2008, right? Which wasn't good for anybody.
No, that was bad.
Yeah, you know, we had to turn the shit. How are we going to pay? You know, this is, you know, all three kids were at the house, colleges, all that stuff. It's like, okay, how is this all stuff going to get paid for? So we turned the ship around we muddled through that. We did fine, and then in 2012, circumstances concerning an accident that happened in our family. We went and sought out some mindful people, you know, some alternative thoughts. Because with our son Craig, as you before mentioned, we've always been open to holistic type things, for alternatives to mainstream, because, well, we just had no choices. We had to go because nobody was paying any attention to it, really. God's honest truth.
Yeah.
Sure. I shouldn't say that nobody was. I mean, in our little lane, our little underworld, yeah, there's plenty of people being there. But in the globally, no. They are now, but that's all another kettle of fish. So anyways, we started learning about, my wife actually was the lead on this, and my daughter, and started learning how these things can, you know, positive affirmations and, gratitude practices. And then I read a book called The Happiness Advantage by Sean Acor. It's a marvelous book, and it is proven, gang. The more positive you, 37% more in sales. Stay away from the negative people. 31% more productive, better life. So, anyways, we pieced all this together, and I had this name, Positive Activity, from another venture that I started years ago, which was again about positivity, but was more along the line of speaking. It was like a local newspaper to speak positively about kids and whatever. So anyways, I had the name, we trademarked it, and it includes, anybody can go to the website and download the Lori's playbook. I've had that down in one of your questions. So, you know, if this one thing, and that's where you can get all the practices that we would suggest you look at and maybe try.
Okay.
I mean, they're all within 10 minutes of your day. You know, if you're going to exercise, that's another kettle of fish. It's all part. So that all got put together. And then what we also had, so I had already written this 7 steps to business development, that we had that. So we just pieced it all together. So it's positivity. So get your mind in the proper place. Leads you to open-minded, divergent thinking, solution-providing creativity. So rarely are we ever boxed in, even with our son. You know, okay, guy's not sure, but a few years ago, we got a call as we were preparing to go on a little bit of a weekend jaunt somewhere, that Craig's Greg's one-on-one person had quit, wasn't coming back, and we had nobody starting. They had nobody in the wings to help. So Lori's now doing the program. He's living with us. Yeah, the whole thing. But anyways.
Yeah.
So we got, but because of the way we live, we went to action. So our productivity part, which is typically the business development part I might talk to your people about, turned into how am I going to make this happen? And what are the steps am I going to do to make this happen? I'm going to go to this one. I'm going to go to that one. I'm going to talk to that one. And then it just kind of, and then all of a sudden we got a new guy for nobody else. Nobody through the help of, I shouldn't say through the help of many people that I found countrywide. It's like you went from this. I think you should talk to that. Okay, how about that? Oh, boom, 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 boom. Next thing you know, we got our guy.
Yeah.
So in business, it's just, and then back to the business real quick, it's just a formula that I've used successfully for 40 years. Now, I got to tell you, I think the algorithm has changed a little bit because we believe in the seven touch theory. That is, it's going to take you seven significant touches to get somebody's attention. Seven. And it's not emails and banging phones and leaving voicemails and being persistent, which sounds like pest for a reason. It's about being tenacious, about looking, taking, if you want to, the old line, taking the road less traveled, using your creativity to get somebody's attention. You know, so I think so. And that's all part of it. And then how do you structure your campaigns? So if you get a referral from somebody, well, gang, don't be thinking they're sitting by the phone waiting for you. They're not. They said that with a couple of beers in them on Friday night to a guy that they've known for 30 years. Great. You got a name. Great. What's your process to get to them? And if it's just leaving voicemails and then getting frustrated because they haven't called me back and Billy said they wouldn't and he gave them the... Just this, what is... And oh, by the way, I've got a perfect example of how that didn't even work this year. Had a huge opportunity in the promotional business. Unbelievable. I was brought in. It was all done via digital. So we weren't meeting. So that I always, you know, you never know how it's going to go on digital. But I mean, I did all my process. It didn't work. And I said to my wife, I said, I'm questioning myself. I said, oh, this is the way to go. This is what works. And it's worked already again, which is just about sending things that are tangible. You know, you got to invest. I mean, you have to invest something into your business. It's not just gas and whatnot. You have to have some sort of leave behind, some sort of something that's going to garner attention, I think. But that's
right, right. Okay. Well, and there's so many things that you talked about there. And I want to start with, you know, sort of my overriding thing is that what I love about the real estate business is all of the, or the sales business, I should say sales, because it's not just real estate, but the same principles and the same habits and the same mindset that makes you successful in the real estate business are the same skills that make you successful in life. And that's sort of what you described. You were talking about mindset as a salesperson, where you were trying to keep your mind, you know, one more try, one more call, you know, finish the route, you know, talk to some new people. So you were programming your mind to do things that the negative would sort of let you slide off of. But then you took those same things, you know, the same things that you're talking about when you started having, you know, challenges with, you know, in your personal life with your son and your family, is that you took those same principles that were successful in your business life and their time-tested principles at work in real life as well. I love that.
There's a friend of mine that he's out in your way. He's actually down in the San Francisco area. What is it? Marin County. He's been there for maybe over 20 years now. But anyways, he comes back here, has spent some vacation time with us, or, you know, when we're down in Plymouth. And he said, I read your book. Is that how you did the other stuff too? I said, yeah. We're looking for the shiny red toy. We're looking for, well, if we only did more AI, if we only did more this, if we only did more that, how about if you just have more conversations with people? I mean, you know, meet them where they're at. If I'm a real estate agent, God's honest truth, I'll never eat in the same place twice in the same week. Let's put it. I practice my craft in terms of, like, you know, actively listening, greeting, and all those things I talked about earlier. At counters and bars and park benches, and yes, occasionally on an airplane. But if you get that person that wants to be engaged, but you should know, gang, if they don't want to be engaged, leave them alone.
Yeah,
I mean, and you'll know right away because you'll just see the body language. If they're hunkered down against the window with their book like this, not approachable.
Right, right. Awesome, awesome. I love that. And another point that you made as you were sharing, you know, sort of that story about the seven meaningful touches, is that how you said it? How was it that you said it? Seven meaningful touches?
There's the conventional wisdom. I mean, you'll find a bunch of people that adhere to this, but you won't find it written like cast iron on stone. But yeah, it's the notion is that it takes seven significant touches in order to get somebody's attention. And I think the number is 80% of the salespeople have gone after.
Yeah.
So gang, be one of the ones that get to at least five, because most of the business is done after five.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard that, you know, people will say no on average five times before they say yes. I mean, I've heard that one. The other part that I have heard that, I want to share with people is that, you know, our society is craving authenticity. And there's so much noise out there. I mean, there's so much advertising noise and so many promises and so many different things that consistency is required almost to make sure that people recognize that it wasn't just a one-off, you know, one-off promotion kind of thing. And the last part of that principle that I wanted to share is that, you know, especially for salespeople, we don't like rejection. So typically, a newer salesperson will take the action of least resistance. If they send a postcard to somebody and the person throws it in the trash, they've been rejected, but it doesn't hurt the salesperson, except in their pocketbook. If the salesperson dials the phone and calls someone and they hang up on them, that hurts a lot more. Well, it's even worse if you go knock on somebody's door and they slam the door in your face, that kind of thing. That's a really long walk back to your car after you've had the door slammed in your face. What I've shared with people over the years is the higher the risk of rejection in having a real conversation with a person is going to have the most impactful action on them. The more you're willing to risk rejection and be real, the greater chance that you're going to be able to have a connection with somebody.
300 gets you in the Hall of Fame.
300 is right. Yeah. So keep trying.
You know, here's one for you. I want to share this with you. It's been burning on me. Okay. I got a whole bunch of salespeople out there. All right. So one of the things about the bar business is that, you know, we would always take care of other bartenders, other servers, right? We know, we got to know everybody. I don't mean giving away drinks or anything like that. I'm talking about, let's get them in here. Let's bring them in through the kitchen, whatever it was. Or just make sure when it wasn't packed or whatnot, that they got a good seat or whatever. So just things like that. So professional courtesy. Anybody out there that is ghosting salespeople that are approaching you deserves to be ghosted. Let me say that again. Anybody out there that doesn't have the professional courtesy of responding even no, thank you, to a salesperson is in danger of being ghosted. Do unto others.
Yeah.
The golden rule.
Good stuff. You're a master salesperson with a long career. What's one or two things that they should go out and add to their business if they're not already doing it this week?
Well, I would say, so if they listened intently and they've listened to your other podcasts or bought a sales book or maybe even bought mine, I would take a look at all of my prospects and my current clients through that lens and ask yourself one question. How could I have done better? How can I do better?
Right.
And examine it. And one of the final, so because when we're going along and we're experts, right? We're subject matter experts. I've been in the real estate business. You start with the 30 years, the 20. I hate to even say how long I've been doing sales, but you know, when you're on these things, you got to say, hey, who's going to listen to me if I said, well, I started last week, right? But humble and kind is the way to go. Humble and kind. So your humility, being right is overrated. It's another good one to remember. Let's not get in arguments with customers when they're saying, well, you know, I think we can get a million for this, and you're only saying we can get 980. Gotta find a way, old Dale Carnegie would, to like bridge that gap in a positive way. So how can you do better? Being right is overrated.
Very good. Well, I appreciate everything that you've shared with the listeners today, Neil, and look forward to reading your book and getting some people to go to your site and following through and working with you in the future.
Well, I appreciate you, Mark. Thanks for having me on. It's been wonderful. Love the real estate guys.
Now, that was my conversation with Neil Rogers. And if you're in real estate sales or building a business, here's the takeaway. Mastery isn't magic. It's fundamentals practiced with consistency and delivered with service and emotional intelligence. If you found this helpful, do three things. Share this episode with a friend or teammate who wants to build trust and get results without gimmicks. Follow or subscribe so you don't miss what's coming next. And if you want training, coaching, or speaking for your team, visit timetestedmastery.com. Neil's links will be in the show notes, including bar tips and positive activity. Thanks for listening to Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell.